Welcome to the Pharmacy Quality Solutions Quality Corner Show, where we believe that quality measurement leads to better outcomes. Let us become your go-to source for all things related to quality and medication use in healthcare. We will hit on trending health topics as they relate to performance measurements and find common ground for payers and practitioners. We will discuss how the Eclip platform can help you with your performance goals, and we will also make sure to keep you up to date on pharmacy quality news. So buckle up and put your thinking cap on. The Quality Corner Show starts now.
Hello, Quality Corner Show listeners. This is your host, Nick Dorich, and we welcome you to another episode exploring quality improvement and how it relates to pharmacy practice. This will be our second episode of the 2021 year. Last week, we discussed updates in the 2021 star ratings. But for the next few weeks, we're going to focus on some new information that PQS evaluated back in 2020 and what it can mean for your pharmacy practice in 2021 and in future years. So if you're not familiar with the PQS Trend Report, please go to our website, pharmacyquality.com, to download and read that report right now. 2020 was the second consecutive year in which the report has been published, and the report focuses on three key sections of survey results. The respondents of the respective survey components include patients using pharmacies, found in the consumer perception section, pharmacy organizations, which represent both chain pharmacies and independent pharmacies, found in the pharmacy readiness section, and we also survey health plans in a section called payer challenges and opportunities with performance improvement. Over the next few weeks, we're going to dedicate an episode to each section of this report. While you and I both know that pharmacists are effective healthcare providers, it's also important for us to consider the perspective of others, particularly the patient or the consumer that we may be marketing to. Before we get into our guest for today's episode, I do want to bring back another PQS team member, that being Todd Saga, our Senior Vice President, Strategy and Development, to provide a little bit more insight into the background of the trend report.
Yeah, well, thank you, Nick. And it's always a pleasure to talk about some of the results. It's something that we've been really excited to produce. As Nick mentioned, this is our second year for the trend report. And it's always helpful to understand the why behind what's produced. And the why for the trend report really came about from our unique position in the marketplace. And that position is working as a neutral third party between payers and providers. Most of those providers, of course, being community pharmacists and pharmacies and their staffs. And what's interesting about that position is that we get to listen and interact with very different types of stakeholders. Payers have a different language. Pharmacists in a community setting typically have their own language. And then prescribers certainly have their own language as well. But just within our own profession, if you interact with those that come from more of a health system setting versus those that might be in a managed care setting or life sciences, they each look at things a little differently. And because of our role as that neutral third party and having a 30,000 foot view to see those different elements of the profession, sometimes we hear what each are saying, but the ability for all of us to speak effectively together can sometimes be a challenge because of the different languages that we have. So that's really the genesis behind the trend report and that unique position was to say, how do we create this opportunity to create a common language, knowing that the patient is usually at the core of that and quality care is very important as well. So we had come together to try and capture the perceptions of consumers or patients and what they see as the role of the pharmacist today versus the future, their level of comfort in receiving certain services from pharmacists and thinking about how that then gets learned or applied by those in community pharmacy to take what consumers are seeing as the current perception or what they see as a future role and how they may make decisions about what they invest in or services they provide based upon the consumer input, because we don't want to lose sight of the fact that patients are at the core of what we're looking at, but how often do we connect with them to ask what they see as the future? So we brought that section in. On top of that, to help understand the language of community pharmacists and pharmacy, we also looked at how they may look at quality and different types of reimbursement and performance-based programs. What do they see as the future? How do they see reimbursement shifting from product to services, but how would that get supported and how may they invest in it? So we look at some of their interest in different types of models and types of measures that these value or performance-based programs may be associated with. And then finally, we bring in some of the perspectives from payers, because that's often a different language for many of those groups. So we try to help payers understand what patients are looking for the future, but also how pharmacy is adapting and how they're looking at new models. And on top of that, what is it that payers are really struggling with when it comes to their ability to improve performance and increase quality from their very broad population health point of view across the entire member population? And so what are the opportunities that they see? And then very specifically, how would they see community pharmacies helping them in achieving these performance or quality related goals? So we ask those questions so that community pharmacy can then see how payers are thinking, and they can also see how patients are seeing the future. And then it shifts for both of those groups, in community pharmacy and payers, creating again that common language. So that was really the impetus behind the trend report. And we're certainly very thankful for those that have helped us produce the report. And that really relates to a lot of the national pharmacy associations and the representatives that we had. We had those from Independent Pharmacy, National Association for Chain Drugstores, as well as other groups such as the National Community Pharmacists Association, and then also the payer point of view with the Academy of Managed Care Pharmacy, and also a representative for PCMA as well. So we're thankful for those, but especially our research partners, who is our guest today. So a special thanks to Dr. Terry Wahrlich, as she has been key in helping us think about how to generate the questions, what are the survey results, how do we ensure that the results are meaningful, that somebody can take something away from it and make a change. So we've appreciated their assistance and happy to have her on the show today. So thank you, Nick, for allowing me to share a little bit more about the background, and I'll toss it back over to you.
I appreciate that, Todd. And you're right. There's a lot in the trend report to cover. And over the next three episodes, we're going to have a lot of great content that explores the thinking between patients, pharmacy organizations, and payers on how to move forward the quality improvement process. But with that, we're going to go ahead and jump into today's discussion and the findings on the patient survey of the PQS trend report. And with that, we're going to bring in our expert. And as Todd had said, we're going to now welcome Dr. Terry Wahrlich from the University of Arizona. Terry is a pharmacist, a researcher, and has been a big part of the PQS trend report. So Terry, welcome to the PQS Quality Corner Show.
Hi, Nick. Thanks for having me on the show.
Before we get into our three question for today's episode, I'd like to learn about you, our guest. So Terry, do you mind providing a quick summary of your work experience as a pharmacist, your current work, and then also, if you don't mind, please share your experience within the quality improvement space?
Absolutely. So as a pharmacist, I'll start with that. So from 1990 to 1997, I served as a commissioned officer in the United States Public Health Service, where my clinical experience spans from inpatient to community pharmacy practice. I spent the majority of my time in the Indian Health Service, and I did a brief assignment with the Food and Drug Administration. Currently, I'm a professor in the Department of Pharmacy Practice and Science at the University of Arizona College of Pharmacy in Tucson. And I'm also their dean of what I like to call AAA, which is Academic Affairs and Assessment. In the quality improvement space, here's some information about my work. So I've taught quality improvement and medication error reduction since I graduated with my PhD in 2001. I've co-edited a book, co-developed a quality improvement course for pharmacists and pharmacy students that at last count, more than 20 colleges of pharmacy were using. And I volunteered for the Pharmacy Quality Alliance since 2006. And most recently, I've served for the Pharmacy Quality Alliance as co-chair of their research coordinating committee.
Thank you for that introduction, Terry. I can confirm for the listeners at home that on my bookshelf does exist a copy of your book. Have read it, and it's a great resource for anybody that's interested in learning about quality improvement. So glad to have Terry involved with our conversation today. For our longtime listeners of the Quality Corner Show, you already know the format of what comes next. But for our new listeners, I'll provide a quick overview of what that's going to be. I have three questions written down for us to explore. I'll go down the list and ask the first question. Terry, you'll give your response, and then we may have some back and forth to summarize the key points for our listener. We will then rinse and repeat that process for the second and third questions, which will wrap up our primary content for this podcast. And when we get to the end, we'll have an exciting closing and summary. Now that we've described the process, we're going to go ahead and we'll jump right into question number one. And Terry, I would like to start with regards to the PQS trend report. And again, this is looking at the patient perceptions, consumer perceptions about pharmacy services. Let's start with who exactly responded to the survey and how patients or consumers were identified for outreach. There are plenty of surveys out there about pharmacy and consumer perceptions related to pharmacy and healthcare services. What can we say or identify about the demographics of the patients that were included in this survey? And if you don't mind, I'd also like us to discuss for a little bit how this represents patients that may typically use a pharmacy.
Okay. So I'll start with how the patients were identified. So we used a large panel of consumers across the country who were over the age 18, and they were targeted for survey administration. Consumers needed to have visited a pharmacy in the past 12 months to be eligible to participate. An invitation to participate in the survey was sent to 2,484 consumers from the panel meeting the inclusion criteria, and a total of 999 respondents completed the survey, which is a 44% completion rate. Concerning the demographics, I won't go on into all the details, but they do appear in the report, and I'll just hit the highlights. The gender of our respondents was 58% female. Their ages ranged from 18 to over 75 years old, with the biggest categories being in the 25 to 34 year olds and the 35 to 44 year olds, which were 25% and 22% respectively. The respondents ranged everything with their education concerning less than high school degree all the way up to professional degree. However, the biggest category of respondents in education level was those with a bachelor's degree, which was 30%. And we also got about 18% with a high school degree or equivalent, and 21% with some college, but no degree. Patients from all over the country completed the questionnaire, and we had regions broken into Midwest, Northeast, Southeast, Southwest, and West. And we got almost a three-way tie for regions that were most represented, and that was Midwest at 23%, Northeast at 25%, and Southeast at 27%. We also asked the patients to tell us about their health insurance status, and the patients who replied had health insurance from everything from no health insurance all the way to private Medicare, Medicaid, and other. So let's talk a little bit about representativeness. So this was an electronically administered questionnaire. So perhaps you could say that those without internet access who are not internet savvy may be underrepresented.
Thank you, Terry. So good information to get us started. And one of the first things that caught my eye looking at this information and the numbers, number of invited participants, number that accepted. For those that aren't as familiar with practice-based research and general surveys, you may look at those numbers and try to understand the context. High rates for completion of a survey aren't always there, but these numbers appear to actually be pretty robust for a survey of this stature, which is really exciting. What I would like to see, and Terry, maybe you can give us a little bit of guidance related to some of those demographics you noted, noting the difference, breakdown of gender, age, highest level of school completed, region, et cetera. Why are these important types of questions to ask in surveys like this? Because I think that can tell a lot of information if we're looking at it the right way. So do you mind expanding on those demographics, why they were chosen?
Yes, absolutely. Great question. The reason that these particular demographics are chosen is because we want to know that our respondents are as representative of the population that uses pharmacies as they can be. So what you really want to see here is a good distribution throughout genders, ages, education, region, health insurance status, so that you can say that we did a good job of capturing people from all those different categories. We didn't leave anybody out in a major category. And so these are all variables that oftentimes are used in survey research to really describe who you talk to. And what we're looking for is we want to make sure that we don't have bias, that we didn't leave anybody out, and that we're really trying to get a big picture of everybody.
Thank you, Terry. I'm making a note for myself, a podcast episode down the road on study design and having those components, maybe something in the future. But for now, we'll move on to our second question and we'll talk about the survey results. I want us to start with the quote unquote opportunities for pharmacy. There are some results where patients are uncomfortable receiving services at a pharmacy based on what we saw in the report, or patients may be uncertain about a pharmacist training. I say that these are opportunities because we know, you and I and our listening audience, we know that pharmacists are effectively trained and able to provide many of these services. Therefore, to me, these survey results imply that pharmacists need to do a better job of marketing our services and education to the general public. But that's my perspective. Terry, I would like to get your perspective on these results.
Absolutely. I agree that identifying in what instances patients are uncomfortable getting services helps the profession of pharmacy identify opportunities for growth because it tells us what we can address. So, for example, the results of the trend report indicate that when asked about getting a vaccine at a pharmacy, which is particularly germane in the time of COVID, among the reasons why some indicated that they were uncomfortable with a pharmacist-administered vaccine were because they didn't know about the pharmacist's training and whether or not they were qualified to administer vaccines. And we had about 32% of people who were uncomfortable getting the vaccines to say that, or not realizing that their insurance covered pharmacist-administered vaccines. And these reasons really highlight the gap in the patient awareness that community pharmacies and payers could address immediately through education about their benefits and their services from community pharmacies. Another example from the trend report, for both 2019 and 2020, fewer respondents who had a vaccine at a pharmacy within the last 12 months reported having no health insurance relative to those who had not had a vaccine within the past year. So this could indicate that insurance status plays an important role in whether individuals receive preventative medicine, such as vaccines. And while it may be unsurprising that those without health insurance are less likely to get vaccines, this represents an opportunity for education to patients that also highlights the needs for pharmacies to advertise or display the costs of their vaccines without insurance. Because maybe if patients saw the cost of the vaccine without insurance, they may decide to go ahead and get it anyway, but maybe it's just such an unknown that they don't. And in general, the trend report is full of examples of how pharmacists can take the results and use them immediately to help more patients and to increase their market share.
Thank you, Terry. The important with the survey, and we know that this is the second year, we learn a lot and as we see responses, experiences from patients over different years. 2019 is certainly very different than 2020. 2021 would certainly be very different, but it's important we learn from how patients are seeing a pharmacy and how they view getting a service at a pharmacy done and completed. With this, actually, Todd, I'm going to kick it back over to you to see if you'd like to add some additional context as it relates to this section of the survey.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the perfect segue because of the year that we are in. This is also a nice shameless plug to go download the full trend report because there are some interesting things that are in there. One of which is a breakout section that we had in this same survey where we asked about level of comfort in consumers receiving testing and treatment for COVID at pharmacies versus other healthcare settings. And one unique way that we characterized pharmacy was also having a drive-through versus not having a drive-through. And when you download the report, you'll see some interesting things there, trying not to give away the full farm. But there was a difference in level of comfort in looking at those who were comfortable with pharmacies that had a drive-through versus those who didn't. So just as Terry was mentioning level of comfort and marketing and educating those services, I think we're in a different lens that we're looking at 2020. And as consumers are also thinking about a level of comfort, there's also a level of safety in their comfort as well. So we've added a new variable to how those may perceive the comfort and the decisions that consumers may make. So just another call out for that, because there are some differences, and to take a look at some of the trends from the report specifically on COVID that were added in as well.
That's a great call out, because some of the original ideas for the report certainly did shift a little bit because of COVID, and that impact certainly has a change on how consumers are going to be viewing the pharmacies that they may utilize day in and day out. Terry and Todd, I do now want to focus our readers and our listeners now to get to our third question, because as we talked about that second topic, again, I list it as an opportunity, but others could look at that and say, hey, that sounds a little negative for pharmacy. But we do have a lot of reason for some excitement and some positivity and some optimism. Terry, third and final question here for you from this primary content. What did patients see as new opportunities for pharmacy, and what do they think pharmacists already do well?
That's a really interesting question. So respondents were asked about how they viewed the pharmacist's role today and what it would be in the future. And they indicated that they believed the pharmacist's role in managing and educating about medications would remain unchanged in the future. But for other roles, respondents indicated that they believed the role of pharmacists would expand in the future, which is great news. Most notably, the differences were in chronic disease education. They thought there would be a lot more of that. And also the pharmacist doing health screening and referrals. So a couple other little tidbits from the report. For the 2020 survey, respondents aged 65 and older were more likely to select traditional roles such as dispensing and reviewing medications compared to those who were 18 to 64. So respondents aged 18 to 34 were more likely to identify roles for the pharmacist, such as screenings for referrals, managing medications, education, prescribing, pharmacogenomic testing, providing travel health vaccines, and also education or overdose prevention compared to those 65 and older. And so I think that this represents an opportunity for education among those 64 and older, and of those who may be unaware that these services are even offered by the pharmacist. Another thing I think is that it really provides a lot of hope if you look at it, because the younger patients are really open to pharmacists serving in these non-traditional roles. And so I think what this tells me, if I was a manager of a pharmacy, is like, hey, I'm going to start targeting these patients from 18 to 64 with some of my new services, and then hopefully expand into other demographics. Also, for the 2020 survey, the roles that respondents indicated increases occurring between current and future roles for pharmacists, including prescribing medications, and that was specifically amongst the group of 18 to 34 year olds, chronic disease education, health screenings and referrals to physicians, and conducting health and wellness screenings. So overall, I think a strong opportunity exists to align pharmacy offerings and services with how consumers are viewing the evolving roles of pharmacists. And again, I want to point out that there's a lot of patients who are totally open to us expanding services. So I think we should take advantage of that.
So Terry, I'm going to disclose something that is going to really kind of call me out here on as it relates to some of this survey, because I am still in that age group of that 18 to 34 age group, just barely, but still am in it. There's not a day that goes by where I'm not inundated with a commercial, an advertisement, some other notice about an app where I can order my medications through, you know, some kind of discreet method, or where I don't have to be necessarily going into a doctor's office. I could be using telehealth and still get a review done by a pharmacist. So there's a part there where the point that I'm making as we look at this, different consumers receive media and information in many different ways. And those that are skewing younger may be more kind of worn down by that message that they can get clinical services done and provided in a number of ways. Whereas those older generations may not have that same information, may not be as familiar with some of the services that are there. Now, that being said, typically that 18 to 34 age range or generation may not need as many services or healthcare services or routine checkups, typically going to be on fewer medications. But for the older patients, we can be expecting additional comorbidities and additional medications, which should further cement the need that they're talking with their pharmacist frequently. So I think this information is really interesting, and your points are very well said that this is an opportunity. Despite how much pharmacists do for those that are 65 and older, there's still more work to be done so that they can understand how they can utilize their pharmacist, to the most benefit that there is possible. All right. Well, Terry, I want to thank you for walking us through these survey results. And it's a lot of interesting information. And again, this was just one component of the trend report. It does seem like pharmacy has some room for growth, but that's actually not a bad thing. With a constantly changing healthcare environment, it becomes important for pharmacists and pharmacy organizations to meet patients where they are. That's just a good way of conducting and operating a service that involves people. Before we do close out our podcast for today, I do have a final item for us to discuss. And Terry, I know you've been involved with pharmacy education and quality. We heard that in your introduction, but I would like to hear a little bit more from you. How can a pharmacist in any role, or maybe even a student pharmacist, how can they get involved and engage with quality improvement efforts? Do you have any recommendations on where someone can start on this path?
Wow, there are so many ways, but here are a few that come to mind. Every pharmacy should have someone who's in charge of quality improvement. The pharmacist or the pharmacy student could find that person and offer to help with a project to learn the process of quality improvement and how to make practice better. And I've got to stress that that's so important for pharmacists, because I grew up in the generation of pharmacists when things were going wrong, they could complain about it, but they didn't know how to fix it. So I think it's so important to learn how to fix some of these problems, not only to help your patients, but to help you sleep better at night as well. Another thing you could do is to take a course in quality improvement or read a book. Mine is called Quality and Safety in Pharmacy Practice, for a shameless plug. For pharmacists, you could get involved with a quality-related organization such as the Pharmacy Quality Alliance, or PQA. And the way that PQA works is that organizations are members, not per se people. And so find the person at your organization who's involved with PQA and ask them how you can help. Or if you can't find that person, maybe email PQA directly and they can tell you who it is. If you're a student, you can apply for a rotation or an executive residency with PQA or the Pharmacy Quality Alliance. You could apply for a PQA CVS Health Foundation Scholars Program and do a quality improvement project with a faculty member at your school. You could form a team at your school and participate in the PQA Healthcare Quality Innovation Challenge. Or another shameless plug, you can get in contact with me and come to the University of Arizona and get a PhD.
Flawlessly executed pitch there for your program, Terry. Having met and worked with some of your, I guess, past and some current students, it's certainly a great way to get involved and help improve healthcare quality. Speaking of that, if somebody does want to reach out to you, Terry, whether it be about quality improvement, whether it be about some of the survey results, whether it's they want to apply to your program after hearing this today, how can somebody contact you?
Well, email is probably the easiest mechanism. And unfortunately, my email address is really long. So here it goes. It's my last name, which is Warholak, Warholak, at pharmacy.arizona.edu, like education. And if for some reason you lose that or can't find it, you could go to the University of Arizona College of Pharmacy website and look up faculty and look for me under the W's.
Perfect. Terry, thank you very much. We do appreciate your insight on the trend report and, of course, all of your work and efforts that went into making this PQS 2020 Quality Trend Report a reality. We have now officially finished our content for today's episode. And as a reminder, this is episode one in a series as we explore the opportunities for pharmacy based on the results of the 2020 PQS Trend Report. Next week, you should also tune in as we will be speaking about the survey results from the pharmacy respondents. We all know that pharmacy has more work to do, but let's explore what pharmacy thinks about the road ahead. I am personally very intrigued about this section because I think it will start to show the different levels pharmacy is on as it relates to providing new and enhanced services for patients. To provide one little bit of a spoiler, if your pharmacy isn't already trained and able to provide CLIA waived testing or to communicate lab results, you might want to listen in next week. With that, I again appreciate you listening to the Quality Corner Show. Finally, there is one message from the PQS team.
The Pharmacy Quality Solutions Quality Corner Show has a request for you. Our goal is to spread the word about how quality measurement can help improve health outcomes, and we need your help in sharing this podcast to friends and colleagues in the healthcare industry. We also want you to provide feedback, ask us questions, and suggest health topics you'd like to see covered. If you are a health expert and you want to contribute to the show or even talk on the show, please contact us. You can email info@pharmacyquality.com. Let us know what is on your mind, what we can address, so that you are fully informed. We want you to be able to provide the best care for your patients and members, and we wish all of you listeners out there well.